Good morning. Today I'm going to be talking about the cultural influences on the development of eating disorders, more specifically towards anorexia, but we're going to talk about more than just media-based factors. So I have no disclosures to make. Briefly, an overview of eating disorders around the world. Anorexia nervosa is the most deadly mental disorder, and so that's what establishes it as an extremely important problem. And commonly we think of eating disorders as existing only in Western countries or rich countries where people have the ability to go without food without sacrificing too much. But this isn't necessarily the case. Eating disorders have been found all over the world in every continent in many different countries. So you see just a brief list of some of the countries where eating disorders prevalence has been reported, and there are many more besides that. And McKino et al. Found that the prevalence of bulimia in Western countries was actually similar to that in non-Western countries. So this misconception that it's either lower in non-Western countries or non-existent is not necessarily true. We often think of eating disorders as culture-bound disorder, like I said, isolated to Western civilizations. And they often credit the westernization of media that portrays thinness as an ideal for young women as the cause of the development of eating disorders. So one extremely important study when we're talking about this is the Fiji study by Becker. They were in Fiji before television was even introduced, and they did a lot of measurements of eating disorder behavior, body perception, image perceptions. And then they also went back after television was introduced and found a drastic change in the amount of people with disordered eating or poor body perceptions. So that is one case, but this common conception that eating disorders are only a result of the westernization of media is really blocking out other factors that influence the development of disordered eating. So Joan Jacobs-Spreenburg wrote an excellent book called The Fasting Girls. It talks about the history of anorexia nervosa, especially its ties with religion. And she says that there are two main presumptions that limit the power of using a cultural model to explain the presence of eating disorders. The first one is that anorexia is the assumption that anorexia is a new phenomenon. Throughout her book, she talks about how anorexia has been prevalent since the 1500s, so it's not necessarily just a westernization of media that's contributing to it. It's been around for a very long time. The second assumption is that the disease is either imposed on young women as victims or it's freely chosen. So we don't talk about the biological or psychological contribution to the development of eating disorders. We commonly think of it as people are taking it on, they're making that choice themselves. So ultimately, the most important point that she makes is that current cultural models don't explain why so many individuals are exposed to westernized media or the same cultural environment and do not develop eating disorders. So there has to be something else that's at play here. So most literature credits other factors. These are some of the factors that I'll be talking about. So first of all, our ties with religion. Between 1200 and 1500 in medieval Europe, there was a very large prevalence of what they called anorexia mirabilis, or the miraculously inspired loss of appetite. People would often, in order to reach a higher spiritual level or a higher devotion to a church or to a god, they saw food as a way to express suffering and sacrifice. So they would fast for a long time in order to become holier. One of the best examples of this is Catherine of Siena, who refused to eat anything. She would occasionally drink herbal tea, and when people forced her to eat, she would use a stick to force herself to vomit. So one of the earliest cases of eating disorders that was well known throughout the world. And even today, self-starvation and eating disorder behavior are tied to religious beliefs. So there was a study in northeastern Ghana that said that a lot of people desired self-control or control of their hunger in order to become more pious. Psychological control is one of the most important factors, I think, that contributes to the development of eating disorders that's really not being addressed in the field. So generally, a lot of people with eating disorders may have a type A sort of personality where they like to have control over their lives, but it can become a little bit more obsessive than the normal person. And the reason that they would use control to restrict their intake or purge and binge is that by controlling your eating habits, you have a direct tangible evidence of how much you're able to control your own life. So food is the one thing that we really can control in our lives. So by being able to restrict or, you know, measure how much they're eating in a day, how much they're weighing in a day, it brings them comfort. This is a characteristic that may be present in a lot of eating disorders that lack the criteria of having a fear of fatness or fat phobia. But this connection between control and eating disorders hasn't been tested in non-Western populations. So it's an important factor that needs to be looked at. It may not also not be about the type of control, but a deviation from the social norm of what control should be. Family structure has been thought to play a role in eating disorders development since the 19th century. So commonly, families of anorexia patients are portrayed as cohesive or overprotective, and bulimia patients' families are portrayed as poorly organized or non-cohesive. But the literature since that point has been non-conclusive. So a lot of literature shows that eating disorder patients do perceive lower levels of patient care than non-eating disorder patients, but there's different perceptions within the family of how the type of family or the cohesiveness of the family. However, one common factor that's been present throughout the literature is that most families show this sense of isolation and constraint in their relationships with the eating disorder patient. However, the most difficult thing with family structure is that a lot of the studies have been done on families where a person has had an eating disorder for quite a while. So it's hard to tell if the family structure existed before the development of the eating disorder or if the stress of having a family member with an eating disorder has changed the structure of the family. Okay, talking about cultural change versus being a culture-bound disorder. A lot of experts say that the conflicting views between two cultures or the fact of having to adapt to a new culture can bring on eating disorder behavior or create body image disturbances. So many of these studies are done with first-generation immigrant families that experience a clash between a traditional and an adopted culture. And this is where control can kind of play a factor as well. When you're switching to, you're trying to fit into a new culture, one of the things that you can control is what you eat. So changing that or having a different body image wanting to fit in with the new culture can often lead to disordered eating behaviors or disturbances in the way you view your own body. One of the most important factors is that there are differences in how we diagnose eating disorders around the world. So we often use the DSM criteria, but that's been developed by Western countries, obviously. And it excludes a lot of important disordered eating behaviors that are not diagnosed as eating disorders. So when we look at prevalence rates around the world, the actual reported prevalence rate, if we can even find any in non-Western countries, can be very low. So for example, a famous actor in Hong Kong, Charlene, collapsed and died on one of the streets in about 2009 or 2010. Due to complications from anorexia nervosa. And this was the first case of anorexia that was reported in Hong Kong, which was really shocking for a lot of the people. At the same time, a little bit before she died, a Dr. Sing Lee was studying special cases of anorexia in Hong Kong that did not have an element of fat phobia or fear of gaining weight. And he watched the description of anorexia actually change as anorexia became more publicized in the media and the DSM criteria came into it, and the way that anorexia was described was from a Western standpoint through the media. So he saw a lot of the cases that he was currently experiencing, they not only grew, but they changed kind of the descriptions of what they were doing and why they were eating the way that they were or restricting the way that they were. So they kind of conform to this Western criteria. So we can see how introducing criteria for an eating disorder into a country can change the actual behaviors of people within that country. And also the criteria for what determines an eating disorder has been changed over time. So, you know, the BMI cutoff that we have has pretty much stayed the same, but the actual, you know, the requirement for the certain number of times that you have to have binged and purged to be diagnosed with bulimia or the certain characteristics that you have to have in order to be diagnosed with anorexia have changed throughout time. So that shows a difference in the prevalence rates of what we've seen. So some overall conclusions. This focus on thin ideal media as the cause of eating disorders is really blinding a lot of scholars and people in general from the factors that exist that contribute to eating disorders. And the most important thing is that these factors can exist across cultures. So it's not something we need to think of eating disorders as bound to Westernization, but the fact that things like family structure, a need for control, adapting to a new culture can exist anywhere in the world. If we can focus on these, I think we have a lot more power to prevent the development of eating disorders than necessarily focusing on how women are portrayed in the media. So a harder goal. It's important, but it's also important to tackle the underlying reasons why people are using disorder or using restriction or other sorts of behaviors as a coping mechanism for a family structure difficulty or a need for control in their life. In general, we also need more research on the prevalence of eating disorders in non-Western countries. We need a lot larger sample sizes. We need more common and controlled standardized methods in order to address the prevalence. And also, I would argue that we need to have the development of culturally appropriate indicators for eating disorders within that area. So, you know, developing focus groups that are going to talk to people about how they view their eating habits or their body image, and developing indicators and diagnostic criteria for eating disorders out of that that are relevant to the culture. Okay.
Thank you, Rachel. Before you go, could you please tell us one